You are now listening to the Black Girl Nerds Podcast.
Five, six, seven, eight. Holla, boys and girls, it's the BGN. Coming from the Marvel world to the DC friends. All the way from Hollywood to the PCN. She defends everyone from sleazy men. Won't apologize for spitting Shonda Rhimes. The space that we make is never colonized. Talking games and movies and actors.
Word?
Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds. Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds. Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds.
Welcome to the Black Girl Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Angelica, and joining me is my co-host, Stacy. Blessed day. Today we are covering Handmaid's episode 8 entitled Exodus, and it was a lot. So Stacy, I want to know your thoughts.
I loved this episode, and I have it really is setting up for some grade A nonsense, and I'm here for all of it. There's a scene in here that just reinvigorated my toxic fave, and I can't
wait. Oh gosh.
Because I cackled. And then just the way everything came together and the way that they kind of planned out everything, and then all the little foils that came up, I was really, really entertained by this episode.
Yeah, it was almost like a caper episode, or, you know, like it was like doom doom. You just felt like, you know, but it's Handmaids and it's not James Bond. But I really enjoyed the roller coaster finally hitting the peak and starting to go down. You see them laying down the dominoes. So I really like this episode, and it felt so long but so short all at the same time.
Right, exactly. I kept wanting more.
Right. I'm like, wait, there's more. Oh, there's more. There's more. And then I was like, oh man, now we gotta wait, and we truly have to wait for the next two episodes to see how it goes. But it was great. I really enjoyed it. So I'll just briefly touch on some tweets from last episode. That I thought were pretty accurate to our commentary. So let me pull it up real quick. I really should go to Threads too, but Handmaids is bigger on Twitter. So someone said, Nick is a crappy person. If he were a person with the least bit of decency, he would have agreed to help Rita. But the moment June left the scene, he showed that he always did good things for her and not out of kindness. And then a hashtag large piece of garbage.
He's also one of those people, one of those guys specifically, who's like, you know, my girlfriend in fourth grade, you know, made me feel bad about myself. And so now every single person is going to suffer for the rest of my life.
Yes.
It's just like, he's like, oh, you're going to reject me? Well, let me take it out on everybody else.
Yes,
it's like, okay, God.
Which is funny because that reminds me, I don't know if you're into reality TV, but I love Bravo. And one of my favorite shows is Summer House. And there is a guy on the show named Jesse Solomon who, he's kind of like an F-boy, and he finally revealed why. He was like, oh, you know, my high school girlfriend cheated on me. And I'm like, sir, you're in your 30s. Go heal.
So long ago. And I was, and again, do you know how many stories girls have?
Guy after guy after guy after guy. We pick ourselves up and we keep moving. So yeah, he needs to get over it. And then a lot of people were really happy and invigorated with blessed be the fruit, let the revolution begin. A lot of people were happy with that line. And then someone, I get, is Phoebe, Phoebe's character, is her character Janet on a different show?
Yeah.
Okay. So I was like, oh, OMG Janet! Thank God!
What did they say?
They said, OMG Janet! Thank God! I'm sorry I ever doubted you. Hashtag the Handmaid's Tale. So I guess they thought, We're happy you're a good guy.
She was on The Good Place, and she
Oh.
was kind of the AI, the heavenly AI, but it was, she's amazing. That's kind of like the breakout thing for
Got it, got it. All right, shout out to Janet.
her.
So let's get into it. So when this episode opened, it was a shot of the Martha's dyeing the handmaid's, robes or dresses or gowns blood red. And then we get a, our quintessential voiceover of June describing how clothes told the world who they were. And then, she spoke on how like people cared so much about clothes, and it was just like so disposable. They ended up in landfills, which led to economic collapse, and so it's like this big overarching story, and when Gilead came to power, they assigned colors to each person and they dictated who they were, or who they thought they could be. They used colors to divide them, to dehumanize them. And then she goes, but tonight they will use the clothes to start a war. They forget that the robes not only represent blood, but rage. And so we see the process of the war, the robes being dyed, being cut, sewn, mended. We see them being distributed through the Red Center, and the handmaids putting on, their robes, their wings. We see them smuggle what appears to be weapons into their sleeves, and then they leave the Red Center, and then June and Moira are among them. So I'll pause there because that was a pretty intense opening shot.
Yeah, I mean, like we said, just readying, getting everyone ready, everyone in position for it's like it's now or never. This is kind of it. You don't get a practice run with this. This is it. And so I really I thought the monologue, I was like, yeah, I get it. Sure. But overall I understood like, the point. So
Yeah, they was laying it on pretty thick. But it's the quintessential June opening monologue. So it's like, oh, we're going back to that. So yeah, the handmaids enter the church. So I'm gonna divide these handmaids. There's the Red Center handmaids, and then there's the household handmaids. So the Red Center handmaids enter the church, and they're in two single files, like Madeline. and they each sit in their respective rows of the chapel or of the cathedral. As the rest of the guests fill in, the handmaids who are assigned to various families, so we're called them the household handmaids, enter as well, and they take their seats. We also see Lawrence entering, with the rest of the high commanders. And then June watches, and mind you, they're all veiled, right? So that's why they're able to get away with. They're all in their veils. And June watches from behind her veil, Nick entering with Rose, and then he escorts her to her seat, and then he walks up to the altar, and turns around as Commander Wharton joins him there. So I'll pause there.
Okay, so first of all, it really makes me laugh because June is so distinct. Those are very distinct eyes, and she loves a staring. She loves to stare people down. And it's like, girl, you cannot have this much rage in your soul if you're trying to pretend to be a handmaid. That made me laugh so much. I was like, you would have been picked out immediately. But what got me in this scene more than anything was Commander Wharton being like, oh, you thought only the bride walked down the aisle? Oh, watch me work, watch me work. I was like, oh, off, Commander. I was like, you're terrible, but I love you.
You cannot. Yeah, he's supposed to come in
Oh.
from the sides, right? Not walking down the aisle, but he needed
Oh,
his
no.
moment.
Give me space. Me, just me. I'm gonna walk down by myself and get all the, and you see these extra little brooches on my collar. Like, I know I'm cute. I'm cute. That was like the last little goodness before he does what we knew he was gonna
Yes.
do.
Well, yeah. So he comes in, he joins Nick at the altar, and then finally the bride enters. So Serena gets her big moment. She's walking down the aisle, and it would look like to me a light blue. It was a very, very light blue. It
Yeah.
wasn't quite white. And beautifully modest according to Gilead standards, with a long train, just very, Princess Diana-esque, you know, the type of like the, with the long train flowing down. So, you know, she had her moment in the sun. And then Wharton's up there beaming with pride and she's smiling and everyone stands. And then what I really took away the symbolism here is that they sit in front of the entire congregation, each in their own seat, almost like a coronation. So it seems like they
Right.
drew from, you know, like the
The
British
South
Empire
Pavilion.
and
Yeah.
how their weddings are done. So I was like, oh, okay. So Nick blesses the ceremony and everyone bows their heads. This is when the handmaids take the opportunity to silently pass their weapons to the household handmaids. And then one girl, poor thing, drops the knife in the middle of prayer, obviously clatters on the floor. A guardian notices the sound. He starts looking around, investigating. They are like pretty tense and June's like, no, don't move. And then the one that dropped it ended up like putting her boot over top of the knife and sliding it backwards. The rest of the girls kind of conceal their weapons and the ceremony continues.
You know, well, first of all, Nick's blessing.
Thine own child and
it was so like, I am an establishment man through and through. If you didn't think it before, if you thought that I had any sort of revolution in me, nah, buddy, I am all about this life right here. We were talking earlier about the knives that they were using, and what threw me off, like I said, is the shape was kind of like this rectangular steel thing, and it has like this little opening in the front. And I was like, it almost looks like a USB drive, or like I thought it was like a syringe thing that they were poking into people, but it almost looks like a box cutter now. And I'm like, where do y'all get these fancy box cutters? But must be a Gilead special. But yeah, it's so interesting that that's what they used, because that requires you being close up. You can't have any sort of indecision. You don't have distance. You don't have the ability to have someone not know that it's you, you know? And I really like that they gave that to the handmaids, because they're like, you've taken away who we are at so many turns, and now you're gonna see who we are up close and personal.
Absolutely. And we know handmaids, when pushed, are not opposed to violence. They have salvaged a few men, beat them, you know, to death. So, you know, they can get down. So we next go to the wedding reception, and the handmaids are brought in and they greet each other, right? So the household handmaids greet the Red Center handmaids. You know, they're knowingly looking at June and nodding, you know, June looking at them with those big green eyes or bluish greenish eyes and that like pierce your soul. So to your point, June is just Juning. and they're seated in a section apart from the rest of the guests. It looks like they like literally brought in chapel like benches for like everyone else is at like a reception table with like traditional chairs and then the handmaids are off to the side.
Almost like a choir stand, you know? It was like.
I was like, okay. So they're seated in their own section and Serena and Commander Wharton entered to applause and they partake in their first dance and like the jazz band's playing and they're, you know, she's being twirled around. Just, you know, they're having their moment. And I think Wharton had said a few episodes back that he always wanted to be that man dancing with Serena. So it was like, okay, they're having their little moment. And then the handmaids are, you know, as everyone's distracted, the handmaids are passing out the remaining knives to those that didn't get it, you know, back at the cathedral. And then June's also staring pretty intently at Nick at his table with her intense, angry eyes. And I'll pause there if you have any thoughts. No, no thoughts, no notes.
Oh, I just, yeah, Nick. I thought it was very interesting that he didn't even think to assume she would be there. You know, he didn't like, you would think, you know, oh my God, he has this all encompassing love for her, and da da da, and like maybe he can feel her presence and that kind of thing. And he's just like, doop-a-doop-a-doop-a-doop-a-doop.
Yes. I think maybe perhaps he feels that way because in his mind, for the moment, they're done, right? And he's like, oh, she's pissed off. She's up north. She's reorganizing herself. He probably didn't think she would have a plan this quickly. So
Which
yeah.
is a crazy thing to think about June, though. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? So it's like he it's just this idea that oh my God, you know, I've loved you so much, and you know, everything about you I love. And it's like, but what do you know about me? You know, and so it's very interesting to kind of see his to just see his demeanor and really see his true self.
Yeah, and I think also he's on his P's and Q's because Wharton is there,
Oh yeah.
Rose is there, so he has to really put that mask on. So during dinner service, Serena goes to Lawrence's table and she's like, "Oh, why do you look so nervous?" Right? Because Lawrence knows what's going on. He's like, "I'm not nervous." And then she's like, "Well, I reassure you that I am committed to our shared goals despite all this pomp and circumstance." And Lawrence is like, "All the more power to you, Serena." And she's like, "Well, no, not just power for me, power for all the women in Gilead." Like she's truly a feminist now. and she's excuses herself to speak with her most important guests, which are the
Very
handmaids. I was just like,
that I
"Girl."
cackled at that because I was like, Serena, you can get shady. Like, we see you, girl. And even Commander Lawrence was like, okay, girl, like,
Right.
don't walk away from me.
Child, go on. So when she steps away to speak to the handmaids, Belle approaches because he can't help but poke at Lawrence, and he's like, "Hey, your former handmaid is my former handmaid," and he takes a seat and he's having a drink, and he's like, "Yeah, my dad has the best handmaid in the entire country. Every ceremony, without question, twins every time. Like it's just." He's talking about her like she's some prize dog that they're breeding. Like it's just kind of gross.
Yeah,
And
like a cow.
yeah, like, oh, twins every time. Like, thank you. And then Serena, she goes to speak with the handmaids. She asks them to gather. June and Moira realize that they can be recognized, so they move to the back. Serena tells the handmaid like how meaningful it is that they've joined her at her wedding, and she assures them that she's going to make it her personal goal that each handmaid is shown gratitude for their sacred service. And this, you want to say something? I was going to say, this is the point where she.
I'm ready for this
Okay,
one.
I'm gonna get through this part and then fire off. So she goes on to recount her experience with her own handmaid, the Audacity. She says, they could have been kinder to each other. They did some unforgivable things to one another, but that made them equal in vengeance and spite. And now she can count her as a good friend. And she believes in her heart that her former handmaid has forgiven her. And as she says this, Rita walks up and she's like, "Rita, tell the handmaids about your story of forgiveness." And Rita goes, "You set a goal, you work towards it, and you keep your eyes on the prize, ladies." And she looks directly at June. So Rita's in on it too. But I'll stop there for your comments because I know you got them.
Ever since the train, we have talked about Serena being able to have a bubble within a bubble within a bubble. Like, if the outer one gets first, she still has it. There is this delusion. And I know she always thinks like her and June, I know she said, like, the enemy of the, my enemy is my friend. And June clearly said on a case-by-case basis. And Serena just does not ingest that. She really believes that because she and June help each other sometimes, that they are now like friends and cohorts. And it's like, girl, that's not how this works. You the, there's too much of a power imbalance. It's never going to be on equal ground. And for her, and June looked like she just wanted to say something so badly. For Serena to be like, I did terrible things, but she did terrible things. I'm like, girl. And so, yeah, it was, I, in fact, at that point, I almost thought that she knew that June or Moira were there. And I couldn't quite read it because I was like, girl, like, this is bold. But I can also see her being like, well, the handmaids hear this, Jill, it'll be inspirational to them. Friends with the wives. And it's like they don't want to be friends with the wives. They did not
No.
want to be here. So yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, just so tone deaf. It's just so tone deaf, so full of herself. So Aunt Phoebe saves the day. She tells Serena it's time. And then Serena's like, okay, well, I'm gonna go, but I'm gonna come back and we're gonna take our group portrait, and I want you guys to be honored and I want you to be unveiled. So June and Moira are like, ooh, time to go.
Gotta go.
So, gotta go. So, obviously, Rita baked this grand wedding cake. It gets rolled in. Serena and Wharton cut the cake to applause. Moira's like, how long is it going to take? And June tells her it'll take about 1 to 2 hours, enough time for the guests to go home and fall fast asleep. So, we learn that the cake obviously has something in it that's going to make people go night-night.
Also, I thought that the I was, this is one of those things I would love to talk with like the production designer or whatever about that cake. It was so interesting because you know a typical wedding cake is going to be white, and I understand like if it's a second wedding, that's probably why she was wearing the light blue, and you would think that the cake would kind of follow that color pattern. But this color was like a brick red and I think like a yellow or green, something like that. And I was like, what? I wonder why this? I thought it was just so interesting, especially because we know that Serena Joy picked it out specifically. And with it being red, I was like, oh, okay, so is this like a homage to the Handmaids? Like you're trying to do something, but then I'm like, well, how do other colors fit in? Anyhow, I thought that was really interesting and really a cool thing to look at.
Yeah, I do think that the main color that stood out to me was the red. And then to me, from a storytelling perspective, it could have been not only does it represent the handmaids, but it represents their death, the death of everyone eating that cake, red blood. So, maybe it's a two-way street there. But yeah, that is a non-traditional wedding cake color for sure. So, that cake is distributed, everyone gets to eating. Rita obviously is declining to eat the cake. Lawrence is not eating the cake. Naomi's like, oh, I can't eat anything else. And he's like, no, eat it, eat it. You eat like a bird, you deserve it. Nick's eating the cake, everybody's eating the cake. And then we see Aunt Phoebe line up the girls. They all have a piece of cake like in their laps, and what is it like? Fabric, what I can't even think of the word, but like a little linen thing to tie it up and take it to go.
Linen bundle.
Yeah, a little linen bundle. And she tells, the girls to line up, and they all line up to leave. And she tells June, like, they'll meet her back at the Red Center. Godspeed. And then as June turns to leave, Aunt Lydia comes in, having returned early from her DC
Woo.
trip, which I'm
Oh
like,
no, not early. I
okay.
don't think she went. Because wasn't just like the day. Oh, actually, that
She left
was
the night
true. Yeah.
before.
How much time has passed between like as soon
A
as they
day.
came in? Then it was like the next day, right?
Yeah, because Moira and June, remember, they got snuck into the Red Center the night before and they're preparing for the following morning. So they leave out with the rest of the handmaids for the wedding. So Lydia left that night, and we learned that she went because Phoebe had mentioned her travels, and then I think Lawrence was pissed that she skipped the meeting. Like she went to DC and came back. I don't know why. But Lydia returns and she recognizes June. And so she calls after her, she chases after her. June gets away and she ends up grabbing the back of another handmaid and realizes, oh, this is not June. And so June manages to sneak off, and actually she passes Nick on the way out. Like normally she would have warned him. Normally she would have said something. This time you're on your own, buddy. And so Aunt Lydia ends up voicing her suspicions to Lawrence, who tells her she's losing her mind. June Osborne is in Alaska. And then Aunt Phoebe intervenes and says, Aunt Lydia, she's had such a long trip. Let's get her a plate, get her something to eat, a big thing of steak, a glass of red wine, maybe some cake, right? And then she could shoot off. And then Lawrence is like, yeah, give her a piece of fruit or something. She's delusional.
Yeah, it's no, I think that she was always suspicious.
Yeah, for
And
sure.
she knew that something was going to happen during the wedding. She just didn't know what. For her to leap to June, I thought was interesting because even when she was speaking with Phoebe before she left and she kind of looked a little sideways at her, I don't know that that would be necessarily thinking, oh, it's got to be June. However, I find it interesting that, because in Lydia's mind, the only person who could kind of pull something off like this would be June.
Yeah.
And she really doesn't know any of the other operatives anyway. So yeah, I thought it was interesting that she was like, June. I was like, well.
Right. For her part, she does recognize her. Maybe she caught a glimpse of her eyes, her frame. She's like, I know that walk. That's June. So, we next cut to Mr. and Mrs. Wharton arriving at their new home in Boston. A guardian greets him and says to Commander Wharton, Commander Bell's senior's gift is waiting in the parlor, and we can only guess what that is. And then Wharton, he does the thing. He picks up Serena, who's all blushing and happy, and carries her over the threshold. He kisses her. He asks her how she likes everything. She says it's perfect. And then she's taken by surprise when he walks over to his parlor, and we see a kneeling handmaid. He introduces Serena to the handmaid, who apparently is the most fertile in Gilead. So alluding back to what Bell Jr. was saying about his father having the best handmaid in the country. And Wharton says it's such a great honor. Serena obviously is taken aback. She's like, "What? We don't need a handmaid. I'm fertile." And he's like, "Oh, but you're only one person, my love." And he's like, "If Gabriel will help us grow our family, she'll fulfill, our duty to God. She'll be our sacred vessel." And Serena's like, "Don't call her that. Like, don't call her a vessel. She's a human being." She goes over to of Gabriel and she says, "Like, what's your name?" And she goes, "Of Gabriel." And she's like, "No, what is your real name?" And she hesitates, but then she admits her name is Christina. Serena's like, "Christina, leave this house, run, and never come back."
Immediately.
Immediately.
Do you think that Commander Warden, it almost seemed political. Like, he's already kind of had to toe the line with the high command, even though he is a high commander. They already kind of side-eye him because he won't go to Jezebel's, and there are other things that he doesn't do, plus all of these things he's done for Serena. I think that a big part of that was I have to take this handmaid. If I don't, then it's going to, send this message, or I only have so much that I can kind of push the issue. And maybe I think then secondary would have been like, oh, well, my duty to God, and let's have like a ton of kids. But Serena was fertile, like we know this. And so for him to immediately go to the handmaid, I thought was so strange and a little off kilter. If it was just to like, if he was just like, I want to bone someone else, So it'll be interesting. I also like that she wasn't too young. And she wasn't necessarily like, oh my God, she's so beautiful. So it's not like, oh, I want her sexually. It's like, no, really, her womb is amazing and gonna carry all these kids. I thought it was just such an interesting way of kind of justifying on his behalf. And hopefully he sees, oh dang, I shouldn't have done that, but we'll see.
Well, here's the thing. Even though he was more open to Serena's ideas and viewed her almost like an equal, I don't ever believe he treated her as an equal. Notice how he treated Naomi. He looked kind of down on her. I think ultimately he's still a purist, and he had mentioned to Serena before that he always wanted a big family. So, the goal of Gilead is to produce children. So I think 100% it aligned with his character, with him getting a handmaid, despite his love for Serena and knowing that she can carry her own child. It's his sacred duty. So I it didn't strike me as unusual. I think I was just like, whoa, first night, that you threw that in her face. You could have eased her into it, but I was not surprised at
I
all.
also think Bell did that on purpose, the senior commander Bell. I think he did that on purpose, like knowing this is gonna cause some issues. It's also that whole thing, and I think that this is making commentary on it without addressing it directly, but the idea that these 50-year-old men are like, I want to start a big family. And it's like, so tell me now that I'm going to be a single mother because you are going to do nothing. You are 50. You know, it's like, bruh, what are you talking about? You want a big family, sir. So yeah, that drives me crazy.
Well, if I remember correctly, I forget what his name was on the show, but Christopher Maloney was one of the high commanders in DC, and
That's
he
right.
had a big family, and you saw he was like very involved and very active with his children. And it kind of reminded me a bit of how Wharton probably would have liked to be, had he been given the opportunity. But I just think the core of Gilead is making babies and popping them out by any means necessary. So I think he, I mean, we'll go more into it as the scene goes on because he explains himself to Serena. So, you know, he ends up telling of Gabriel, Christina, to go up to her room. And then Serena basically saying, like, I'm stupid. I cannot believe I fell for this. You know, you're just like every other commander. And you finally see Wharton lose his cool for the first time with Serena. He screams, like, enough. And then he quiets himself, he collects himself, and he tells Serena he's indulged her. He's compromised. He's accommodated. He's made radical changes to his life. He has bent to her liberal attitudes, but he will not turn his back on God. And then Sarita goes, "You think God wants this abomination of a marriage?" And Wharton says quietly to her, "You have deceived me." So it's like, oh gosh, the betrayal. So Noah cries. You know, he's saved by the bell. Noah's always crying, and they're interrupted. So Serena takes Noah from the Martha that's caring for him. She tells Wharton she cannot stay with him. She tries to leave. He forbids it. He insists that her place is with him. He says she has nowhere to go and she's under his, and he hesitates to finish. And she's like, under your what? Under your rule? What are you going to do? Cut off my finger? You're going to beat me with a belt? You know, all this has been done to me and I'll survive it and I will survive you. And then Wharton says, I am not something to survive. I'm a good man. I'm a good husband. And she says, how can you be when you're a commander? So that kind of gets him. He's definitely betrayed by what she said to him, and he reluctantly allows her to leave. And then we see Serena run out into the night with her child. So I'll
It's
stop there.
very close to ooh, actually, I wonder if Gabriel has a knife too. Was she at the wedding
No, I don't think she was. I think she was like hand delivered from
later?
DC to the home, so she wouldn't have known.
Okay, so oh, she was like, you know, you're a commander, and it goes back to the Nazi thing. Of, you know, like, well, I didn't think Nick would betray me. And it's like, well, he's a Nazi. Like, why wouldn't he? And that's kind of the. And we also know that because of this indoctrination and because of just the system as a whole, he believes that what he's doing is the right thing. Because when he says under my, I think he was about to say like under my protection or authority. And the first thing that came to me was under my thumb. You know, it's like I got you pinned down, you are mine. And I think it was that made him realize like, oh, she might have a different view of this. But then that ego comes back in and it's like, you've deceived me. And it's like, she has told you from Jump Street who she is, what she wants. There's no deception except that the delusion gave you know.
Right. You lied to yourself about who she is.
Exactly.
But she also lied to herself thinking that he was different and she should have known better. But here we are. So yeah, she
Well, you
leaves.
know, it would have answered an issue for her because of course everyone was like, when are you gonna get married again? When are you gonna get married again? And she's like, well, I guess I have to get married again. Or, you know, she didn't really want to, but she was like, if I do get married, it'll keep these people off my back. It will add more credence to my words because I have a husband, quote unquote. And then she's like, oh, he seems to actually be different. Maybe we can kind of kill two birds with one stone. And it's like, no, girl.
Nope, you're wrong. So we're back at the reception. It's empty. Aunt Lydia's sitting at a table finishing up her dinner, and she asks the server, you know, who sat over there? So she's noticing, like, you know, the pews. And the server says, oh, it was the handmaids. So she gets up, she looks underneath, and she sees the handmaids left behind their cake. So now she's like, something is up. So we
Okay,
see.
wait. I'm so sorry. Before we go on, this thing confused the mess out of
Oh,
me.
what? Yeah.
So first of all, because I was already on edge. I'm like, taste the cake. Eat a bite of the cake. It's delicious, Lydia. Get your cake. And she just kept not touching it. And then she saw the thing under the seat. And I was like, what is that? And then I just saw like mounds of stuff
Of
because,
cake.
yeah, it well,
Yeah.
I in my
Oh,
head,
you didn't know it was cake.
right, I thought there were bombs. And I was like, why isn't she more concerned? Like, what's going on? And she said, oh, when they had given them the cake originally, for some reason in my head, I was thinking, oh, that's what they're using to serve to the other people, like the handmaids have to serve. I
You
completely
weren't
went awry
following.
with all of that. But because my whole thing was like this plan has to be so airtight. How do you let anything stick out? How do you take that chance in any way, you know? But we also know that Lydia's eagle-eyed, so let's not be too
And they
specific.
also weren't planning for her to be there. She was supposed to be in DC the entire time. But I don't necessarily think it was a mishap because how can they account for Lydia? I think some of them took the cake, some of them left it behind, but nobody ate that cake. But it obviously is a smoking gun, Aunt Lydia. Something is amiss, and I need to check it out. So, we see the handmaids walking together in the streets as a group, and then we see each handmaid go off one by one to their respective homes. June is the last one, and she ends up entering the home of the Bells. So she quietly makes her way through the house. She finds a sleeping Bell in his study. The phone's ringing. He picks it up.
A
That actually
drugged
wakes
out
him up.
Bell.
Yeah, he was drugged up, but the phone ringing over and over wakes him up. He answers it. He's confused by the caller's message, obviously expressing some type of concern. We can assume that they're realizing the cake is knocking them out because he's like, what are you talking about? Repeat yourself, huh? And then he hears June behind him and he turns around and he instantly recognizes her and he goes, June Osborne. And June goes, nice to meet you. And immediately stabs him in the eye. Immediately stabs him in the eye. He goes down. He dies without a peep, like a little bit of a death sound, and then he's done. What I actually love about this scene is that she sits down where he was sitting, over top of his body. She turns, grabs his scotch, takes a sip, steadies herself, and then that's when Janine finds her, and she says quietly, "June," and they turn around, they meet eyes, and Janine says, "Thank you."
And wifey is already knocked out, I'm sure. She's already
Yes.
drugged and in bed. I thought the phone call was really interesting because it did sound like someone's story. And I was like, is this Aunt Lydia? But then I was like, this sounds like a man's voice. And I was just like, huh. And then when he turned around all groggy and was like, June Osborne. The only thing that got me though, I'm like, June, stop wasting this time. I'm like, I get it, I get what you're doing, but don't drink anything out of this man's house and stop wasting time. Get up, go. See, it was fine.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty gangster moment to be like, let me drink. I'm gonna drink your scotch while I sit over your body. And so we then go to Aunt Lydia in the Red Center. We know she's suspicious. She notices there's an aunt asleep at her desk, so obviously she was eating some of the leftover cake. She's greeted by Phoebe, who tries to distract her. She's like, "Oh, let's try out your recipe. The girls are all safe in bed. Let's go." And Aunt Lydia's like, "No, I need this check on the girls." And so Phoebe follows behind her, and we see Phoebe get her little knife out and get ready to go. And then a guardian approaches, so Aunt Lydia is saved.
And she fixed it up real quick. She was like,
And like, oh.
ooh, exit stage left.
Me put this up my sleeve. And then, Aunt Lydia demands Phoebe opens the doors to the handmaid's sleeping quarters, and then she enters. So she kind of walks through.
Oh, wait, before that, because what I love about Phoebe is like, you can tell she is just recalculating every step. What am I going to do? Okay, I can't stab her. What else? And it's just like, open the door. And she's like fumbling with the
Yeah,
keys.
fumbling with the
Is
keys.
it this one? Is it this one? And giving the handmaids enough time to be like, all right, get in the bed. pretend you're asleep. We have an issue. And then
Right.
So it opens it up and
Yeah.
almost works.
Yeah. So there, she walks in, so she's followed by Phoebe. She's followed by the guardian who's armed. Aunt Lydia walks in. She's like surveying. She goes over to a handmaid who appears to be asleep. She pulls back the covers and the homegirl is fully dressed, like down to her boots. And she's just like, oh, absolutely not. So we see her make the handmaids get out of bed. She makes them kneel. She's like preaching to them about their wicked ways. She's trying to coerce a confession out of them. And then she instructs the guardian, who's named Peter, to shoot Aunt Phoebe. And that's when Moira's like, uh-uh, because Moira's with them. And she stands up and she's like, Aunt Lydia, get the F away from her. And Lydia's like, well, who are you? And Moira's like, oh, you don't remember me? And so Aunt Lydia's like, well, what's your name? And Moira says, why do you care? You stole it from me. And so she says, my name is Moira, you effing bitch. And I had to, not using all her cuss words. Aunt Lydia's like, you're working with her. You're working with Jude. And Moira's like, I don't know who you're talking about. Who's that? And Lydia's like, you know what? I know June's back. I knew it. Y'all gonna tell me where she is. I will not hesitate to shoot a traitor. And then she's like, where's June Osborne? And then June walks in. She's like, I'm right here, Aunt Lydia. And then the guardian aims his gun at June. And Aunt Lydia screams, you did this. And June's like, no, you did it. You trained us to be this way. After you beat us, after you mutilated us, after you tortured us, you took away our children. There are things that you saw that you cannot unsee. There are things that you learned that you cannot unlearn. But I know deep down in your heart, you know that, rape is rape. And we don't deserve this treatment. And she knows that deep down, each one of them has an immaculate soul given to them by God. And it's just crying out for dignity. And Aunt Lydia's like, don't you dare assume what's in my heart. And June's like, well, I want you to ask yourself, do you think God will allow this for your girls? Do you think actually, do you think God would just empower a woman like you to stand up for handmaids and finally say enough?
I loved the emphasis that she put on Eden,
Mm-hmm.
and it because it's a Lydia thing to say, it's a Lydia thing to do, and I thought that that was so well done. But at the beginning, when she was like, when Lydia was like, you did this, and when June was like, no, you did this, we said it the exact same time, me yelling at my TV and June yelling at Lydia, and it was just such a perfect way to put it in the monologue after time that they're just screaming out for dignity, and it's like, yeah. Yeah. So good.
Get with it. And so Aunt Lydia is moved by the speech, but what really sets her over the edge is Janine walking in. And, Janine says, he hurt me. They hurt us. They raped us. You gave us to them. Like, she's putting this on Aunt Lydia. And Aunt Lydia's like, all I ever wanted to do was to save you guys, was to help you. And so Janine's like, well, if you want to help us, like, set us free, let us go. And so Aunt Lydia finally gives in. She walks over to Peter. She lowers his gun, and then she goes to Janine. She holds her, and she's like, "I'm so sorry for hurting you." So she's taking responsibility for hurting her, for hurting all the other girls. And they hug as June signals, like, "Okay, this is the time. Get out. Like, we're not gonna overstay our welcome. Let's go." So all the rest of the handmaids leave. Janine and Aunt Lydia are hugging. Janine breaks away from her, gives her a look like, thank you, and she joins the rest of the girls. And then June, kind of gives Aunt Lydia that nod, like, thank you for seeing our side. Thank you for standing up for us. And she walks out. And then Aunt Lydia, poor Aunt Lydia, she just falls to the ground. She cries out. She's like, God help me. And she's just in tears at like just the impact and the heaviness of this moment.
There is something interesting about the fact that she said, God help me. And she kept saying it over and over and over instead of God help them, watch over them. And I think in one way, it can be seen like just as a selfish thing, and she's only thinking about her. But I also think that she is saying, help me to actually be a help to them. Because she keeps saying over and over, all I've wanted to do was help you. All I've wanted to do is help you. And Janine flat out told her, every time you try to help, it ends up hurting me,
Yeah.
And so she Lydia knows something is coming next, and it's going to be something that she has to show strength and dignity and resolve in the face in. And when we talk about the testaments, we kind of see maybe one way of how it got to that point. But I thought that that was such an interesting way to do that, because it was more like, God help me with what I'm going to have to do to actually be a help in these next few hours, days, weeks, months, etc.
Yeah, and also think like God help me with the strength because she knows what she will face if she's found out, right? She let a bunch of handmaids go on her own watch. So let's see how she gets out of that.
I also thought it was interesting that the guard just disappears. He was like, "Oh, we going?"
Peter said, "I'm out. I don't got the stomach for this. I can't be shooting handmaids." Aunt
He
Lydia
said, "I
said,
want to
"Let
be a
them go."
veterinarian. I don't know, man."
I ain't built for this. So the handmaids run out into the night, and then the episode ends with a voiceover from June. So I'll quote a bit of it. She says, "We were angry, we were exhilarated. The dress became a uniform, and we became an army to free ourselves from the prison of the dress, to free ourselves to become who we were meant to be, who we deserve to be. We would take our freedom and use every last ounce to fight. And so we fled away from the darkness within and without and into the light." And then we are treated to shots of the household handmaids, approaching their various commanders. One of them happens to be Nick. At least that's what I thought. That was Nick sitting in the chair, sleep. And then we
I was
see,
okay. Go
yeah,
ahead. I was
I think
wondering
it
about
was Nick.
that.
I mean, I was like, it was he was in front of a fire, kind of like the same seat he was sitting in when he saw Rita, when Rita met with him before. So I was like, oh no. And we see the rest of the handmaids, the Red Center handmaids run into the streets, and so everyone's preparing for war, and that's how the episode ends.
Do they have a handmaid? Does Nick have a handmaid?
He must have gotten one that night. I mean, I don't remember him having a handmaid, but seeing that
Right.
Commander Wharton got a handmaid, maybe, as a way for Nick to show that he's still one of them. Now he has a handmaid. But it looked like a woman, a handmaid was approaching Nick sitting on the couch.
I'm looking at now because I was like, this almost seems no, that's not Nick. It's someone else, but it's someone unknown that I'm thinking.
Okay, I thought it
But
was Nick, but either way, he's night night somewhere.
Woo.
And if he doesn't have a household handmaid, I'm sure the plan is to kill all the commanders. So,
I'm also a little concerned though because if Rose ate that cake, then I'm like, ooh, what's gonna do to that baby? Also, oh, so this is also the reason I thought those were bombs under the thing because they were like, oh well, we have all those bombs that we were gonna use for Jezebel's. Let's just use them now. And I'm like, where are they? And when are they going to go off? Because at first, when they had the little things, the knives, I thought they were detonators. Because I saw like the thing on the side, I thought it was like a button. And I was like, are they gonna what
Gonna blow up.
am I? Right. They're like, I do too. Bing.
Then
But
they
yeah.
would die. But yeah, I mean, it's all stealthy and close quarters, and so I'm sure there's bombs strategically placed throughout. They just haven't gone off yet, and I'm sure we'll see in the next episode. I mean, it's pretty easy to predict the handmaids are going to stab a lot of the commanders. Bombs are going off, the American military is rolling in, they set up the plan. It's been working pretty well thus far, so yeah, that's how we end the
I
episode.
cannot wait. Oh.
I was like, dang, I want to see someone else get stabbed. But anyway.
And this is the great thing about it being the series finale is that they can really wreak some havoc. They can kind of do what they want to do because they're like, we're not coming back. Let's get it done. And I think that it is going to be amazing. I am sapped. Eyes open.
Yep, and there's two more episodes to go, which so I'm like really looking forward to see how they wrap this up. Stacey and I are going on vacation this week, so we may be a bit delayed with episode 9, but we will definitely be covering the last two
Yeah.
episodes, closing this series out. So as always, may the Lord open and we will
Under
talk to
his
you
eye.
under his eyes, and we will talk to you guys soon. Bye.
The Black Girl Nerds podcast is produced by Jamie Broadnax. The opening theme song to our show is written and performed by Samus. Various instrumentals are performed by Samus, Sky Blue, and Shubzilla. You can find various episodes of the Black Girl Nerds podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Audioboom, Google Play Music, and Spotify.